In the new book, Netflix, financial journalist Gina Keating taps into sources cultivated over nearly a decade of reporting on entertainment and technology to reveal behind-the-scenes drama and clashes of egos at both Netflix and Blockbuster. She draws on new interviews with top executives to unlock the motivations behind decisions in the protracted war over market share that played out to a mystified market in a financial drama. Keating outlines the early days when Netflix was an idea, describes how the business model developed, and relates how Netflix went on to play several contradictory roles in the world of business. Wall Street darling, most shorted stock, perennial consumer favorite, company in disgrace, online rental industry pioneer. We welcome Gina Keating to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
What brought you to this subject of looking to how we get beyond the video store?
I covered Netflix for 7 years, almost 8 years, as a reporter for Reuters, and they had been sort of stuck into my beat along with Disney and DreamWorks and some other larger companies, and I didn't really know at first what they did because they were barely 2 million subscribers, and I watched them grow from that to 30 million today in 50 countries, and it was just kind of unbelievable to me and a lot of people that they managed to do what they did, because there was no indication really that the market was going to be that big.
When you look at the company right now, how they've had a rocky time over the last year and a half or so. So when you look at them right now, how stable are they?
I know the market loves to give this company a lot of drama, but I find them, just because of the enormous amount of information they have about consumers and their ability to project it into the future, I find them to be a very good bet. They invented how we watch movies now, and that's a very hard thing to do. It looks very easy, but it looked easy when they were doing physical distribution of DVDs. Everybody thought they could do it, and everyone took a run at that. Walmart did it. Best Buy tried to do it. Amazon tried to do it, and it's just hard. I mean, because what they do better than anybody else is they, first of all, know their consumers very well, and that entire business is optimized by algorithms. So if there's a place to cut costs or, figure out demand, they're going to do it pretty much better than anybody else.
You write about this, and it's fascinating to me that one of the things that struck me when I was a new customer to Netflix was, and it continues, is just how much they want to know about you. They want to know what you liked about the movie. They want you to put down as many movies in the past that you may or may not have rented from them, but they want to know what you like. They want to know what your thoughts were. They want you to rate things, and that's all information that goes into that system, right?
Yeah, they developed that matching algorithm to survive. Back in 1999, they were having a really hard time getting people to come back to the website. I mean, they had pitched themselves as, hey, we're the Blockbuster store that's huge and has every DVD that you would ever want to see, when Blockbuster was refusing to carry DVDs. So that was kind of their hook, but they couldn't get people to come back. And they figured, you know what, if we know our customers a little bit better and can predict, what they might like, we can email them and say, hey, come back and look at this movie. And it worked great for them on two levels. Number one, it did generate the repeat business that they wanted. And number two, it sort of pushed people towards the back catalog, the older titles that were economically more advantageous for them. And it made it so they didn't have to buy this huge amount of DVDs of new releases that people would want to watch for about a month, and then they would have this enormous amount of DVDs that nobody wanted anymore. So it was a really great proposition for them. In streaming, they've got an even more advanced version of that, where you don't even need to put in your star ratings if you don't want to, because they can watch you as you watch the movie with your streaming application, and they make a lot of inferences from the way that you watch the movie. If you fast-forward through stuff, or you watch certain scenes over and over, what time you watch the movie, how much content you consume at a sitting, And those algorithms are so sophisticated that they can actually predict your behavior based on your viewing patterns. The algorithm can even figure out who's watching in the household when you share an account with other people.
Yeah, okay. That's creepy, though, right?
It is a little weird. It is a little weird.
That's
but
creepy.
You know what? You have to kind of think, yes, at least in the case of Netflix, which is basically just delivering you movies and not doing anything nefarious, that it does make for a better experience.
Yes. Now, what I find interesting about this is that so they came under fire and lost a lot of customers a while back when they said, okay, you're a customer, you can get physical DVDs from us, and you can also have streaming. And then they divided it and say, there's going to be a cost for this and there's going to be a cost for that. What seemed like a bad decision at the time, except that it also seemed like a way to do away with the physical DVDs and just get people into streaming. Is that ultimately what they were looking to do?
Yes. I think the answer is absolutely yes. Reed Hastings said many times to me and other journalists that he would deliver the last DVD himself and that he thought it was going to be sometime in 2025. And I always thought when I was interviewing him that just seemed ridiculously long for people to still be watching DVDs. And he at the time seemed very ready to let that happen and to let the DVD by mail business sort of wither on its own. I think what happened was that, and this is what my sources told me, is that he just became very impatient because it's extremely complicated to run the two businesses side by side under one corporate umbrella. It essentially just takes two completely separate staff to do it. And he was trying to do that. He was trying to separate them so that they could run more efficiently. But that served him and not consumers. And that's where he really went wrong, was he just thought, you know what, I know it's better for people. They're going to like this better anyway. And so let's just make it happen a little faster.
The big issue, of course, in just the 2 minutes we have left, the big issue is that much of the content that was available to us in our mailboxes is not available to us online to stream. If we could get that movie that was released today, a Tuesday, and we could stream it, then that wouldn't be as big of an issue. But the catalog that they have made available to stream and online is very limited.
Yeah, and that's a function of the studios themselves. I mean, the studios are really struggling right now with how to make money in digital delivery. And, you know, they had all these different pay windows that they were using for their normal content deals before digital distribution came along, and they made a lot of money doing that. If everything goes straight to digital, which it looks like it's going to, you know, they don't have as much money to play with, and I think that they're trying to experiment with Netflix and all the other digital platforms to figure out how to make up that income. So I think for many, you know, probably several years, we're going to be stuck with this real fragmented content, you know, having to go and watch different seasons of Mad Men on different platforms. And it's really irritating for consumers, but,
right,
you know, that's not really Netflix's fault, I don't think.
Who does Netflix consider their main competition to be?
You know, I would say the cable companies. I don't know if they would be, they don't want to say that out loud, but that's who it is. You know, Reed Hastings envisioned a world in which you would have like a, you know, internet television. All the content would really come through the internet, and you would be able to choose your purveyor, like Hulu, Amazon, Netflix,
right,
on sort of an a la carte basis. And I think that destroys the cable industry totally, because then you won't, you know, have the 500 channels that you watch three of. You'd actually be choosing things that you really watch.
It's a fascinating book. It is Netflix, The Epic Battle for America's Eyeballs. The book is published by Portfolio from Penguin. Gina Keating, a great pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.